Welcome to the Gary Gallagher Law Hour. Attorney Gary Gallagher and his firm have represented thousands of Hawaii workers and families during more than 35 years' practice throughout the islands. Whether helping countless workers exposed to asbestos unknowingly in their jobs, filing suit against gas companies for unfair local pricing, or representing the state of Hawaii and winning a settlement against Big Tobacco, the Gallagher Law Firm helps fight for consumer advocacy and fair play for the people of Hawaii. No kopono on your behalf. Now, Gary and his team are here to take the mystery out of what they do and answer your legal questions. So here's the host of our show, Mike Buck, and Hawaii attorney, Gary Gallagher.
Hey, hi there, and welcome. We're so glad that you've decided to join us today. And, you know, I guess sometime when I was a little kid, I heard the expression, patience is a virtue. And I was just talking to Gary off the air about what our program was going to be up today, and he said patience. And I'm telling you, this is a very, very arduous, long journey that Gary has taken on behalf of many of his clients. As you heard in the intro to the show, Gallagher Law has specialized in large actions against big business and government and everything else, and these things take so long. You've heard us talk about the asbestos cases before. Well, today, boy, you're going to get an earful of what is going to be a real eyeball filler, eye opener on what sort of stuff goes into one of these proceedings that can last literally decades. Thank goodness you're in pretty good shape, Gary, because I mean this battle's been a pretty arduous one, and I just can't believe it. And I think our listeners would be really interested to know that you're now making some payments to clients that were involved in a procedure against the asbestos manufacturers and users that's gone on for decades. That's amazing.
It is. It's sad but true. Oftentimes, you know, we can spot something and we think something's wrong, or we try to get a remedy, but people do not appreciate how long things can take.
Well, let me specifically about this one, because we've talked before about other things that you've done, and one of the high-profile stories today are these airbags in cars. And I would think that would be like an immediate thing, because they got an accident, they got somebody hurt, and they got these bags all over the place. Are some a lot shorter than others just based on the physics of what it is, rather than this the investigative process that you had to do in the asbestos thing is unbelievable?
Yes and no. I say yes from the standpoint that sometimes investigation takes a long time, mm-hmm. or if you had the investigation and it's airbags, yes, the injury is immediate and you find out it's defective. But if you find out that the airbags were looked at 20 years ago or 10 years ago and somebody mm-hmm. lied about it and covered it up, that can take a long time to figure that out.
And, well, what about with this asbestos thing, in many of your clients or many of the people that suffered from this didn't maybe manifest problems of the disease until a long time later. So what I was interested in today is you mentioned that today we're going to call the show a traveler show. It's pretty interesting because there's a lot of traveling that's going on here. Where did you decide on that moniker? And what is the traveler's part of the asbestos trail?
Well, with respect to this particular story, it's Travelers Insurance Company.
Okay.
Well, how did they get involved in this? Well, it turns out that Travelers Insurance Company insured many of the major manufacturers of asbestos products way back, mm-hmm. 30, 40, 50, 60 years ago.
Specifically asbestos, or just the fact that they're a manufacturer using asbestos?
Both.
Okay.
Johns Manville had mm-hmm. some Travelers insurance coverage. Combustion Engineering, Owens Illinois, Owens Corning Fiberglass, mm-hmm. Pittsburgh Corning, all kinds of manufacturers of asbestos-containing products had insurance with the Travelers.
I was watching the thing on TV. I meant to tell you off the air. I was watching a thing on TV the other day that showed an asbestos mine. And it was unbelievable. It was this huge hole in the ground. And where these guys had been taking this stuff out of there for literally decade after decade after decade, and still are doing in some parts of the world.
Oh, in Canada, there's mines up there that have been opened for 100 years.
Wow.
And the Canadian government helps those companies continue to mine and manufacture and sell those materials around the world.
Do you find, Gary, that there were so many applications for this that it was so tempting for so many different manufacturers to get into that as the complaints or issues came up, they just thought, well, you know, that's just a little cost of doing business. We don't worry about that. We're just going to keep making this stuff.
Well, a lot of companies did exactly that. Mm-hmm. And the main companies involved, Johns Manville, Raybestos Manhattan, and others, did more than that. They covered up the known evidence of health hazards, actively covered it up.
Yeah, and the uncovering is you say, not only that did it take a lot of time, but some of the stuff that you discovered, and I hope that we can develop this during this program today, is you could be at a place looking for something else, and you see something up on the shelf like you did, and say, hey, wait a minute, these guys said they didn't do that, and there's a label with their name on it. Let's talk a little bit about some of that kind of stuff.
Well, what we have found out is that a lot of these companies don't take the rules of the courthouse as seriously as we do.
Mm-hmm.
We try really hard to get the facts straight, and when we're called to answer interrogatories and swear under oath, we do that. And oftentimes things will change. We'll find out additional information, and I have to supplement that. But we're finding out that decades and decades go by, and sadly, some of these companies lied from the beginning about their involvement or having asbestos in their products. And it was only after decades that myself, as an officer of the court or lawyer representing injured people, or the courts were actually got to figure out the truth. And it was way different than the companies had sworn to originally.
Yeah, that's really, I find that fascinating, and actually a lot easier to understand and believe now that now that we've been doing the show, because I guess that maybe, you know, a lot of what you do is when you talk about a lot of these companies have either merged, disappeared, gone bankrupt, stopped doing business, and a lot of times I would imagine a victim of one of these things gets very frustrated because it looks like there's so many dead ends in what you're doing.
Well, what happened in this particular case in Combustion Engineering and the Travelers Insurance Company was 15 years ago, we discovered a fraud that had been committed on all of our clients up until the year 2000, as well as the court or the courts here in Hawaii, and it's taken 15 years to get justice for that fraud we discovered back then.
What are some of the things that you have to and that your team has to share with clients about this patience is a virtue thing that I mentioned earlier? Because it's not quick. It's not going to be overnight. You really have to really dot the I's and cross the T's and be patient.
Well, 90% of the time it is fairly quick. We try to expedite everything. But every now and then we'll find one of these extraordinary circumstances. We're investigating another one currently I'm not at liberty to talk about, but it's similar, very parallel facts, to where Combustion Engineering told the court in 1979 and 1980 and 1981, 82, in state court and federal court, that they never sold any asbestos in the state of Hawaii, that they did not qualify under the qualified products list to sell to the United States Navy and never sold any asbestos to Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard.
How valuable is it when you discover, when first of all, you take somebody for their word, like you say, you know, you think somebody's going to tell the truth, and they say, well, we never did that. And then later on, you can prove they did that. Doesn't that build a pretty strong case against somebody to say, we never did that? Well, really, here's your name on something that says you did.
Well, once we showed this to them, they multiplied how much they were paying us in an individual case, in some cases almost 400 times, so that tells you, from nuisance money to real significant money. And what happened in that particular case was, at the eve of trial, we found out that they weren't telling us the truth. The court took jurisdiction over the matter as part of the settlement, and we kept digging and digging and digging, and we found out that they had been lying to us for 20 years.
We have found, we have talked in other shows, and by the way, gang, when you want to know more about these things, when we specifically talk about some of the types of actions that, that the Gallagher Law Firm does, you have to go to Gallagher Law, GALIHERlaw.com, and see some of these things in more detail, and more importantly, how you can contact the office if there's something that you'd like to add to the conversation or something that you're curious about. And I guess maybe people have to understand, Gary, that you've explained in previous programs that 90% of, or most of the kind of the work that you do, it's on settlement when everybody gets paid, whether they be the attorney, whether they be the injured party, the injured patient. So when you take on something like this, it must mean that you already realize as a business owner that, hey, this is going to be, this is going to be a big mountain to climb. We got to really, we got to keep track of all of this stuff and figure out who's on first.
Well, it gets very, very complicated. But, you know, once we figure something out, it also becomes very, very important because that company that defrauded us didn't do it by themselves. They had the help of their national lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
And once that came to light and the court deprivileged some communication that's usually privileged between lawyers and their clients.
Yeah, you hear that a lot, right, on TV and stuff. Ah, that's a lawyer-client privilege.
That's right. Yeah. Well, there's something called crime fraud where the lawyers can be involved in covering up or
let me
creating
the
fraud.
You know, I'm really get curious about that as soon as you said that, because you know right away, we just had a very high-profile case in the news today where a billionaire is going to have to pay a huge fine for doing something and fooling around with the stock market and all this stuff. When that happens, can attorneys and their firms be held liable as well as the company committing the fraud?
Well, they certainly can. Mm-hmm. We're still taking a task. Their National Coordinating Council, mm-hmm. who coordinated this fraud, and at the time the company was or the law firm was out of Cincinnati, and they were a part of a Travelers Insurance company who was trying to orchestrate mass settlements back in the 1980s, in the late 70s, early 80s, and it turned out that some of these documents that showed that they had information that was contrary to what they were telling us and the courts in Hawaii, Travelers Insurance Company knew about it. They were involved. And as a result of that, we took our case and went national with it and filed some class actions that were resolved years ago, but the appeals went to the U.S. Supreme Court, the Second Circuit, U.S. Supreme Court twice, and the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York three times.
Wow.
And so
that's where I say patience is a virtue. You got to hang in there.
So it's only now that our clients are getting paid.
That being said, I want to go back a little bit more on this. Obviously, and I think you've explained this on previous programs, but I want the audience to really understand something. If you represent me in one of these cases and get a judgment on my behalf, and it's pretty open and shut, I got sick, it was because of this, here's my settlement. How valuable is that to your firm when somebody else comes along suffering a similar condition where you can go to court and say, hey, this is just like the Mike Buck deal. So this guy deserves the same settlement, the same treatment as he got.
Oh, that generally is our garden variety case that we handle every day.
Mm-hmm.
And those are handled routinely. And with the exception of the outliers that require a great deal of litigation, that's how we do business. And that's very, very valuable because we have an established track record here. We honestly and independently evaluate our cases independently and make sure that your case is a real case. And we do that confidentially, and there's no risk, and we do that all on our firm's time. And it's not until we're convinced there is a claim that we bring it.
Yeah, and you know, I think this is really important for a couple reasons, and maybe we can just look at it at a slightly different angle. Let's say if you're somebody's defense attorney and the guy's charged, you know, been accused of a murder, and you're doing your best to get him, you know, the best defense possible. I think the attorneys, they know that the guy killed the guy, but they're just trying to, you know, work it out. What about companies that hire an attorney, and the attorney buys into the fact that the company did wrong and is part of the denial process?
Well, that we have to be very careful there, mm-hmm. because there's lots of legitimate defenses that honorable, you know, counsel representing mm-hmm. defendants bring up, and we do it all the time, see it all the time, and we look into those facts. It's every now and then that we will find something that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
And this case with Combustion Engineering and the Travelers Insurance Company, that whole settlement speaks to that.
Let's zero in on these guys, because I you told me the story off here. I think it's fascinating. This combustion company said, look, we didn't make anything out of asbestos. We make these steel buckets. What happens to them later? I don't know. You know, it's not our problem. What happened to these? What did these guys do?
They told us, their local lawyers told us, that Gary, my client never made any asbestos, never stole any asbestos, and signed a declaration that said just that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we took their what we call nuisance settlement rather than
digging. Can I explain what that? What's a nuisance settlement? What is that?
Rather than go through all the costs of litigation, mm-hmm. I'm going to believe you on this and take your word at this.
Mm-hmm.
You've given me something I can rely on, something you filed in court, and you're, you know, the statement from the lawyer.
Okay.
So we take that, and rather than a true approximation of the case, we'll just take what they call a nuisance settlement. It's easier for them to work out something to pay us for the nuisance of it rather than to deal with it as if it was a legitimate claim.
If you counsel me as a client, if I take one of these nuisance settlements, does that preclude me from going back again later on the same with the same complaint?
Not if it was all on the up and up.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Yeah, important.
In this other case, and so we did that routinely for years, mm-hmm. and hundreds of cases. In fact, 1,800 of them.
Wow.
And 1,300 of them before the year 2000. Well, in the year 2000, we're working on a different case, and this one was not out of Pearl Harbor. It was not out of, like, all of the Outer Island power plants and power plants on this island we had dealt with. And so we're going through this, and I see a bill of materials for asbestos rope, asbestos millboard, asbestos, all kinds of different things. And up at the top of the bill of materials was this combustion engineering.
Oh, boy. So, that's like finding a gold vein, isn't it?
I said, well, wait a second. What
is
this all about? And I wouldn't quit until mm-hmm. I said I'd get to the bottom of it. Well, I went to the court and got emergency orders issued. And as part of the settlement of that case, it was coming out of the refinery, the Chevron refinery out of Campbell. We started getting more and more documents. And then here it came to light that there were documents looked at 30 years ago, and there were other documents that we didn't know about when those interrogatories were first filled out. And a local lawyer made a mistake and stamped some documents that were produced to us that were supposed to be for just the lawyers only.
Oh, it's supposed to stay in-house and came out the back
door. Came out by mistake, and it listed all these combustion engineering products that had been coming to every single power plant we had in the state of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. So it was clearly a fraud.
Based on
that, I went and got the court to give us more orders. And long and short of it is, we got documents from the national lawyers and deprivileged as crime fraud, where the lawyers were involved when they filled out those interrogatories. They had all of their sales. Mm-hmm. And after that, I got documents produced that company had sent asbestos and boilers to Pearl Harbor starting in 1929.
My goodness.
See, and then during World War II, they sold asbestos to the Navy by the tons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this took a long time to ferret out.
I guess the thing that I find most curious is that many, many times there will be some guy in a shipyard or in a factory in a sugar mill or somewhere, will I don't want to say invent, but will sort of create blending stuff together and using it. And my question has always been, and I think that listeners would be interested in this too, you know, when you go and do an asbestos suit, you know, obviously you go to the big company, the manufacturer of this stuff. But what about the liability that the sugar company had, or that the refinery had, or that somebody else had, exposing their workers to these products?
Generally, somebody like the refinery or the power plant would know much less. I mean, or the refinery or the plantation would not have a fraction of the information the manufacturer would have. So what we try to do is identify the manufacturers of the products that use it over and over again, and they're more likely to have the information on the disease process.
Yeah, I would imagine that it would add a tremendous amount of the cost of doing business if every business using every product had to go through what a manufacturer should go through about liability. I mean, they would have no idea. If you sell me brake pads, I'm buying brake pads. I don't realize that the stuff in the brake pads might get my mechanic sick.
It depends on who and where. Mm-hmm. With respect to certain brake manufacturers, they knew from in the 1930s that we're doing original research with Johns Manville into these products. Mm-hmm. Because one of the original uses for asbestos was in brake pads. And the companies who were making asbestos textiles, the main use of those textiles was for brake pads. Mm-hmm. And they were finding that the guys cutting the brake pads in the factories were getting sick.
Yeah.
Why? Because of the asbestos. So they were doing research in the 1930s and 40s trying to defend themselves against claims from workers in their factories. And they didn't come clean about that. They just kept selling and selling and selling. And then there came a time when the car manufacturers were becoming aware that they had to treat this differently. They did not pass on those warnings.
We've talked in the past before about this, and a couple of people have said to me on the street that have become regular listeners of the show, and gang, we're so glad to get feedback from you, either here at me or by going to gallagherlaw.com, especially with questions or comments or additional information that you might want to try to glean out of what you hear. I think that one of the things that became fascinating when somebody explained to me at a store the other day that they learned from you in your explanation why people could work next to each other in the same place for a long period of time, one person get sick and one person not get sick. And you explain the respiratory part of the asbestos problem was significant because this stuff actually went out of your lungs and got into some other part of your body and gave you a cancer that killed you.
Oh, yeah. It's very, I mean, there's two things there. There's one is the individual susceptibility and variability. We see that day in and day out. Two guys can have the same jobs for the same period of time, do the same work, identical period of work, and the identical job description, and one guy gets sick and one guy not gets sick.
I got an example for you. Right after you told me the story, I was talking to a friend of mine, and he said that he was at once, when he was in the Army, he was in the Army with twin brothers. And the twin brothers, they were almost Siamese twins. In other words, they went everywhere together. They did not, and they both were heavy smokers. One guy died of lung cancer at 45, and the other guy's still alive at 90. They both smoked two packs of cigarettes a day or whatever, and they're identical twins. One got cancer and one didn't.
That goes to show you the individual susceptibility.
Yeah.
So they have identical, they had the identical genes.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, similar.
Same pack of cigarettes, you know.
So that goes to show you the individual
variability. So what I'm guessing is that there are probably a lot of families out there listening with loved ones that were either exposed to this and never got it and got lucky or still haven't manifested the symptoms of the disease that they got in their body now.
Well, that's it. There's three categories. Either it doesn't affect you at all,
mm-hmm.
you get lucky, or you don't get lucky, and the last category is the one that still has it in there. It just hasn't manifested itself.
I'm still fascinated going back. Let's get back to this particular guy, because you said that you were actually physically looking for something in one place, and lo and behold, here is evidence showing that this company was very deceitful in that they actually did use asbestos in manufacturing.
There's a lot of national counsel or general counsel at many corporations. Their first instinct is to hide it. And unfortunately, sometimes a national counsel for them will tell them, yeah, that's a good idea, and they get away with it. Well, it's a good idea in a superficial sense that they avoid liability, but they do it by defrauding people. Mm-hmm. And once a court figures that out, or somebody like myself figures that out, we're not going to stop. We're going to get to the bottom of it.
Was this? I'm sorry. I just got to jump in here because I love this part of our discussion. The discovery that was made in that boiler company stuff, not boiler company, combustion company stuff, must have been, gosh, we got you, man. I mean, you know, you can run, but you can't hide. One of these days, you're gonna have to own up to this.
Oh yeah, once I figured it out.
Yeah.
But it took a while to figure it out, and we had a courageous judge here locally that made the right decisions and gave us the documents. And then once we kept forcing them to produce, you know, from their answers to interrogatories, mm-hmm. no, we never sold to the Navy, no, we never sold to any entity in mm-hmm. state of Hawaii, to a little stack of documents,
yeah.
you know, 3 inches tall, to the next stack of documents, a foot tall, to the next stack of documents, 6 feet tall, going back to 1939.
And these started with documents that were inadvertently stamped, that were supposed to be like in-house work documents. I guess that shows you today. If you think your emails are private, nothing, forget about it. We're going to find you somehow. But that probably, did it open the floodgate of...
That's why we discovered this here in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another one we discovered in Hawaii that went national.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working on another one now that I'm not at liberty to discuss. But the facts are very similar, except instead of having... a handful of documents, I got millions of documents. And it's amazing what, you know, some lawyer on the mainland can decide to do that affects thousands or tens of thousands of injured people nationally.
Does this ever come into play? I mean, today, you know, most of us are trying to do the best we can for the planet and be go paperless and all of this stuff. It seems to me that a lot of what's been of value to you and to your cases in the past have been the ability to find this paperwork and find these documents. How much more difficult is it in this technological age where there's nothing physical? It's all in the air. It's all in the cloud somewhere.
There's two parts to that. One part is it seems like it'd be more difficult. And then finally, again, we got some orders to go actually look at some hard copies of documents, and people guarded them like armed guards.
Yeah, of course.
Like, I mean, we show up with 5 or 6 people, and they have people watching us like hawks
mm-hmm.
on just going through index cards. And then later on, we find out that there's this avenue to pursue, this avenue to pursue, and this avenue to pursue. And then, lo and behold, we find out that some of it's been digitized. What?
Yeah.
This was digitized. Mm-hmm. And then we go find, we start, you know, kneeling around that mm-hmm. for a while, and we find out there's millions of things.
Sure.
So, at different times and different places, we found it different ways.
Well, but that's
the main
good.
Thing is we keep looking.
I was going to say, but that's part of the team deal, because I noticed that, you know, while you and I might be getting noticeably slightly longer in the tooth, you got some bulldogs that are technologically pretty hip, and they can go find that stuff.
That's it. We all work together as a team.
Yeah.
And we look at this in the long run. We have cases, and the vast majority of our cases can get resolved in short order. What I mean by that, within a year or two, in the complexity of this litigation, that's excellent. But other piece of it can go on for literally decades.
How difficult is that to explain to an incoming team member that they're fresh out of the bench? They got, the school, they got energy, they want to be an intern, they want to learn, they want to become, you know, involved, and they think that it's going to be like you go up to the ATM machine, put in the card, take out the money.
No, that gets dispelled pretty quick.
Yes.
Pretty quick. When they see what we have to do to get ready for a trial, what we have to do to verify the information that we have and what information we think we have and what we have to do to add to that information, people figure it out. It's not easy.
When you made the discovery on the combustion guys, had some of that materials been sitting around for a while? Was it on shelves and in parts departments or whatever waiting to be used, and say, hey, you know what? This is something we need to get a hold of this. We need to do this.
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it was hidden.
Ah, okay.
Most of it had been hidden. And then once we found out there were some things to go look for, then we had a better idea where to go look for. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't have that inside information, you wouldn't have had a clue at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But once we start figuring it out that this was bogus from the beginning, we can go back in time and figure it out.
How helpful have workers been? I do know that a lot of what you've done is to go back and find out who was the maintenance chief or who was the mechanic or who was the brake guy. These are the guys that may be not specifically clients in something, but that have hands-on information about who did what and where the stuff came from.
Yeah. They've been very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Very helpful. Give us ideas. In that a plant might be going out of business in some place like St. Louis, and we'll find out that, hey, maybe you should go talk to somebody over there, and we'll find out some old-timers that work there. And they say, oh, yeah, that combustion engineering, we had the factory over here, and we went and found out they got rid of a lot of old paper. And then we'll go find some of that old paper. And then we'll piece that together and then find another place to go look.
I don't think that back in the day, you're talking decades ago, that businesses came and went the way they do now. It seems like now some company will come out and they'll open a nationwide chain of restaurants, and the next day they're all gone. And, you know, and I do know that, you know, they're not necessarily the ones that are causing people, you know, over a long period of time to get sick. But I think we're seeing a lot of either amalgamations or mergings or changings, or like you've explained in the past. But I think that people need to know that there's still, I guess, a trail that you can follow, and somehow you can fix, you know, some responsibility to some of these people, even if they look like they've gone.
Oh, no, I'm pretty trusting up front when I meet people, whether from here in Hawaii or from the mainland. But, you know, once I find something's not right, then I'm a different animal and we dig deeper. But I know your impression and what you feel is oftentimes, I think, accurate. On the other hand, behind a lot of these big, big companies, there's a lot of history.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of history here in Hawaii at certain places, sugar mills that we've gone to Outer Island. We found great collections of old documents that help us identify manufacturer products were there.
Kind of neat that it's still even visible, isn't it? I mean, you know, people know that, you know, today there's shredders, there's all kinds of stuff, and there's people that think, hey, wait a minute, if this comes up later, forget about it. Let's get rid of this stuff.
Oh, no, there's a lot of that going on. But there's a lot of archives that are at various places, and so we've developed pretty good antennae and instincts as to where to go look.
Have you, obviously you've been doing this for such a long time now that there have been probably some days luckier than others. Can you maybe cite a couple of times when maybe it was getting pretty frustrating or pretty, you know, oh, this is just not working. I can't keep going. And then all of a sudden, you know, aha, here's something that's pretty interesting. I'm sure that's happened particularly with asbestos in a number of cases.
Oh, no, it's happened over and over again. It's happened in cases where, you know, we think a company only, we know them for one product.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go dig on that one and dig and dig and dig. And well, in our questions under oath, ask for all products that you manufactured. And then, you know, we'll think they'll just make one type of product. And then their answer comes back, and it just tailors their answer to just one product, and they ignore all the other products they made. And sometimes that might slip by us for years and years until we'll find this name of this other company, or this name of this other type of product is really related to them.
You know,
and they've been intentionally suppressing that.
Yeah.
And their national lawyers, that was by design.
Sure.
That, you know, they were the biggest manufacturer of XY, and we only knew about Z.
Well, see what you said earlier in this combustion company, they didn't necessarily manufacture the asbestos. They used it in their product. So they went and got their asbestos from somebody else. So they probably wanted to say, hey, listen, don't come get me. Go get these guys. I didn't invent the stuff. I just used it in an application.
Well, they did that or tried to do that, but in the terms that they used and the language they used, they just lied.
Yeah.
Just plain old lied.
Yeah.
And the term manufacturer is, if I go to Johns Manville, I go to Eagle Pitcher 66 that makes a cement, and say, I want you to make that 50-pound bag of cement, but I want you to make it something different. I want you to name it for me. I want you to name it CEC special, combustion engineering special. That makes you a manufacturer now. So they did that too. So they even lied at that level. And they didn't sell that by a bag or two. They sold it by the pallet and tons and tons and tons and tons.
Sure. Yeah.
And because what happens, what we found out in their shoreside installations on boilers, like they had at Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard in 1939, they supplied all of the insulation with the boiler. They didn't just sell them the naked steel. That's not going to do them any good.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, that
set that
I'm
on
the
fire
at the other end. What do you mean steel?
Yeah, yeah, it's good. You're going to go, what's that big red glowing thing? Oh, it's a boiler. Isn't it supposed to be covered with something? Oh, well, they sell that part too. You know, they sell it all together. You know?
I guess maybe the thing that is the most enlightening for me is going down this trail with you, learning about some of these specific things, is there are a lot of balls in motion all the time, and it seems like, I hate to admit this, because you know, you think of America, the land of the free and opportunity and everything else, that there was and probably is a lot of deceit and a lot of, you know, let's not worry about that, this is going to make us so much money you won't believe it.
There's a lot of that going on, and it's interesting from the standpoint that that's why we have the law that protects us, the strict products liability, in that, you know, if we're here talking, we can make this thing and be good, but if we're going to mass produce it, it's just going to go out there, and by the tens of thousands or millions of units, we're going to know what's in it, or especially if we start working with it and the people working with it are, you know, starting to get sick or have what's causing that, and you figure it out, you got to come clean on that. As long as you come clean on it, it can be dealt
with. Yeah, that's the other
it's
side.
When you cover it up,
yeah.
When you pretend there's not a problem when there really is, that's when the stuff hits a fan.
Has anybody ever asked you, and I'm sure the answer is yes, there's still big asbestos mines in Canada. Is there any safe use of asbestos?
In my opinion, no.
I'm thinking no. Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, I wouldn't want to subject anybody I know, their children or grandchildren or anybody to it. And at that point, that kind of answers the question.
Yeah, I mean, you say, well, it's all sealed up. Really? You know, is anything really all sealed up? In other words, wouldn't the eventual outcome need to be at some point in time to say, whatever we were doing in those mines, we either have to cover them up or certainly stop using the stuff?
Well, they don't. Yeah. And unfortunately, they send it off to third world countries, India, Pakistan, places like that, where there's no regulation.
Yeah.
Or nothing like the regulation we have.
You kind of get worried. I'm kind of a little bit worried as a consumer. It's all right, you know, this is not happening anymore. But what about something that's made in India and then comes in here? How do I know what's in there?
We don't.
Yeah.
And we've seen it time and time again with what's manufactured in China.
There is I wanted to throw that in there because I do know we could do a whole show standing on one ear on that. Right now, China's economy is struggling. They're trying to cope with the recession. They're devaluing their money. And in many respects, I think that, I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I think that there's an awful lot of stuff coming out of that country that down the road is going to be very, very detrimental to our economy and to our health.
Not even down the road. It's already happened.
Mm-hmm.
They've put inferior products or things in dog food. I mean, they kill animals. So, because it's cheap. Same thing with other products. So,
well, they got floor that are off-gassing this stuff. They got carpets, and they got
drywall.
Plywood, and they got resin. They got all of this stuff.
No, exactly. And the regulation there, you know, doesn't hold a candle to what we have here.
I think you got to get a couple of Chinese-speaking attorneys in your office, because that's where a lot of this business is going to be coming from down the road. I don't mean that from a comedic or facetious standpoint, but I mean it must be to you, with the experience that you have in tobacco and in other faulty products and in asbestos and some of the other things, that place is just a train wreck waiting to happen. I mean, there's going to be so much coming out of that because of all of this money that we've been pouring into them and getting back, you know, dangerous stuff, dangerous products.
Yeah, well, that's why we have the laws that protect us. Let's just back this up a little bit. We love representing people from Hawaii, and, you know, the vast majority of our work is here. We'll take a small piece every now and then and work on cases on the mainland, but it's of something we've discovered and figured out here in Hawaii, like this traveler's thing we took nationally. But the law here protects everyone as much as can be, even if it's manufactured in China. If they're working in conjunction with American manufacturer, the American manufacturer has a duty to make sure it's done right, or the local distributor. There's ways to recover.
You're right, because a lot of these companies are say taking a widget and taking it to China and say, look, we can sell a lot of these in America, but we got to make them cheaper. But then the company that's asking for that is, I guess what you're saying is, responsible for what the end product is before it gets.
They have to make sure that it's their quality control. Mm-hmm. If they take their formula over there, they just don't give it to them. Here, Baca Lou, send me a check. They got to make sure they're really making it according to their formula.
That being said, let's talk for one brief moment about maybe some of the concerns people should have about medications and other things coming from foreign places that don't have the FDA stamp of approval. Somebody says, hey, well, you like this pill, makes you feel good? I can get you one of these for 50 cents, you know, just as good, same thing.
That's a word to the wise on that, and that's why we need our regulatory agencies in place more than ever to ensure that's not happening.
Okay, I still am fascinated, however, by the length of time it took. And what you're saying is that you had some cases that came to fruition in around the year 2000.
Yes.
And this is 2015, thank goodness.
Yes.
And it's been 15 years. How often do you have to have a little chit-chat with a client saying, you know, just hang in there, this is where it is, you know? How often do you report, or how often do they need to get some sort of an answer?
Oh, we try to give periodic updates on this one, but it's been a nightmare in some sense, in that so many people were sick to start out with.
Yeah.
So now we're dealing with children and grandchildren and tracking down relatives for this disbursement. So, it's a huge logistics problem.
Who handles the actual physical disbursements?
Someone in our office or a team in our office.
Yeah. So when a judgment is granted and the appeal process is done, whoever the guilty party is has to give to you through the courts this settlement that you then disperse to the stakeholders.
Exactly. Yeah. It goes through generally a defense firm or entity on the other side, and then goes into a trust fund. Mm-hmm. And then there's an accounting, and then the individual disbursements are made.
Has there been times when you've had to say, hey, look, this is something we're not going to keep pursuing? I don't mean on the big ones, because obviously, you're very tenacious and very dogmatic about that. But there would be, I would imagine, some cases, if you will, or some instances where you would advise a client or tell somebody, this is really a tough thing. It may not be solvable. It may not be winnable.
Oh, no. We look at cases and we know something was wrong, or something might be related to something else, but it's just economically not worth proceeding on or proceeding on. We see that not infrequently. We're just real direct and honest about that. We can't do it. In theory, there's a legal claim. In theory, there's a way to recover for that. But if it's going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to investigate and proceed on the claim, the chance of recovery or what we could recover at the end of the day is not going to cover the cost.
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense.
Isn't that sometimes the case where it gets to a point where you know that you're right on behalf of the client, but the righteousness doesn't relate to the fairness or the reality of what can be there?
Oh, no. We see that, it happens, and that's sad and true, especially if it's a one-off type of circumstance.
Yeah.
If it's something that's happened over and over and over again, and it's really strong, that might lend itself to a class action type proceeding.
Are we quicker on the trigger now when we find problems? I mean, this asbestos situation that you've been working now on is decades. And I would imagine that you said, we just talked briefly about China, there may be new products. For instance, you know, this laminate flooring or whatever you have is relatively new to the user. And some of it is not good. So maybe these cases are going to get proven or there will be accusations quicker.
It depends on what's alleged to result because of exposure to the product, oftentimes the science is not there.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes years and years and years to develop the science, especially if there's it's a latent disease that can stay undiagnosed for many, many years. So, yeah, that's just the nature of science, and we have to follow that, as opposed to a traumatic injury that happens just right then and there.
Sure, yeah, and I was going to differentiate between that, because some may remember, and we will probably have back in here another member of Gary's law team, and she is a registered nurse named Cynthia Davis, and is, as you say, for decades, a real important part of the research and the documentation on things that involve a medical case.
Correct. You know? And so that's just how that generally unfolds. On the other hand, on foodborne illnesses, we can usually get documentation of that right away. But on the hypothetical you put out there, something related to a floor tile or something related to some sort of gassing of something, that could take a lot longer.
Yeah. I guess maybe it, and it doesn't have anything to do with this particular case that we're talking about today on this asbestos, but it must weigh heavy on you to know that a potential wrong can't be righted, that there's some poor victim out there that is either sick or lost their life, or somebody dear lost their life on something that has been pretty well covered up. I mean, there's just no way that you can get to the bottom of some things, I guess.
No, that's fortunately, that is a very, very small percent. Mm-hmm. I'd say less than 1%.
Oh, that's good. That's encouraging.
Yeah, it is. And we will know. I mean, for instance, if someone has mesothelioma, I can almost assure you we can track it down with enough investigation.
Yeah, that one's right in the crosshair. I mean, that's been vetted out to the point where you can really ready identify this stuff. I one thing that came up, somebody said a couple of programs ago, wanted a question, and I remembered what they said, and this was not to do with China, but to do with foreign countries in general. I mean, what you do in the U.S., I mean, if you have to go sometimes to somewhere else to get information or data or research, from what we understand, it is probably a lot more difficult in other parts of the world to get anybody to come up with anything.
We've done that, and we do that. We do it here locally, and you know, we've litigated against big car companies that come out of Japan, and we've had major battles that go on for months, if not years, and right into trial that have had courts give orders that company has to give us information out of their law offices or legal offices in Japan. Well, yeah. That takes a lot of work to get to that level.
You know, do you find it interesting? I certainly do, that these recall things now seem to be so much bigger and more often than they used to be. In other words, some of these manufacturers were getting away with a lot of stuff for a long time, and now people are all over them like a heat-seeking missile if they find something. But I'm talking about the sheer number of vehicles that get recalled.
There's a lot to that, in that the manufacturers have gotten away with a lot for a long time. When they say we don't have anything, we don't have any information, you're kind of at a dead end until you get a whistleblower or somebody on the inside and say, well, that's really not quite right. Then we get a source of information. And that starts to accumulate, and then after there's a change of administration or somebody else decides to dig deeper and they start going back and looking at the same thing having to do with the ignitions, the faulty ignitions,
sure,
or the airbags, whatever it might be, they find out there's a pattern in practice. And when you're looking at a mass-produced product that's truly defective, that's usually the case.
You know, what is interesting to me, though, is that it seems like some of these cases are so big that you wonder how the company can survive. In other words, they've done something that's so wrong and hurt so many people, and when the fickle finger of the law points at them and says, you're to blame for this, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and they say, fine, well, we'll just go out of business.
It doesn't work that way. The economics aren't skewed that way. When you start multiplying the number of units that they make and the profit they make on them, and if they make a calculated decision not to repair a faulty gas tank design for put it in, behind the axle instead of in front of the axle, and that was going to cost them $17 to move that. They made a decision on that, and in some cases, there's actually what we call bean counter memos that will figure out how many people are going to die because they got incinerated in a rear ender, and they won't fix it intentionally. Well, when a jury hears all those facts, it's they can be pretty strong on the defendant. On the other hand, when you look at the economics of it, of a business decision.
Yeah, you know, by the way, I got to keep reminding you to go to GallagherLaw.com. That's G-A-L-I-H-E-R Law, L-A-W.com, because there are different categories of what's happening in the practice that you can go and do a little bit more research on. And I want to make sure that we come full cycle on this discussion whereby you were able to show that no matter how they thought they were going to hide it, this one particular combustion company in the final end run gets a judgment against them in 2000. It gets parsed out, they go appeals, and now it's 2015, 15 years later, that payments are finally being made to the victims and the families of these people who were affected. That's got to be a pretty good cap to put on a day, I would say.
Well, it's good, especially from the standpoint that what we learned here helped thousands of other asbestos victims on the mainland. Because what we have, after they wouldn't settle with us here, Combustion Engineering wanted to, but they didn't want to reopen all those cases. They had defrauded us. And then that's when we took it to the next level, and we took it to Travelers Insurance Company. Mm-hmm. And they were the ones, at the end of the day, ended up paying $478 million out nationally.
Yeah, now that would be a very bad day at my household. But this is a company that's been around for over 100 years, Travelers. I mean,
long time. And they did every single thing that they could to drag that out as long as they could.
What's the Gallagher trick about being able to understand that you go against a company like Travelers or anybody else? They have boatfuls of attorneys and aides. Is it the righteousness of the case that overwhelms those numbers? What is it that makes it work?
You know what a case is and what a case isn't, and you know I'm seasoned enough to have been around enough, and you know I've gone to court and had 50 lawyers on the other side.
Oh, geez.
Seriously, yeah. I've been in court with me on one side and 50 lawyers on the other side.
It's like how you try to localize it. That's like, Waialua High School going against Kahuku in a football game. And it gets, you know, and the kids do, if you can just kick a field goal, you're a winner. You know? That being said, we're going to talk more about that going down, folks. You've been listening. We've got a tremendous number of programs coming up dealing with football. It's one of Gary and my favorite things. And we'll be talking about that some more down the line. But I think that this sort of little meander that we've done today has been kind of fascinating, if for no other reason to give people the understanding that you have to, if when something's right, it's worth the fight. It's worth keeping your nose to the grindstone and just plugging away until you get satisfaction.
Oh, no, I will not say, if we have one of these Pilau defendants on the other side, and I know they've been lying to us, once I know that, it's kind of like, you know, ahi, they want to sell you the fish. Yeah. Once you smell the smell, I don't care what the price is, you're not buying.
Yeah, and I think that's.
But I'm forced into it. Yeah, I'm forced into it, and I won't get. I won't. You know what's causing the smell? I already know what's causing the smell. They're not telling the truth. That's why it gets all haunted like that, and we don't quit.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I mean, if it smells like a dead ahu, it's a dead ahu. You know, you can put some lipstick on it, but it's still not going to taste so good at the end of the day. Terrific stuff, Gary. Thanks again for sharing your Manao and spreading the word for us. And gang, if you need to know a little bit more, we'd appreciate you visiting GallagherLaw.com, GallagherLaw.com. And by the way, you can get a case evaluation. You can do all kinds of things. But more importantly, you can find out when we talk about the team, what the team is about. It's a great place to visit. Go out and check it out and join us again next time on the Gallagher Law Program. Thanks for being here. We'll see you. Aloha.
Well, that's our program for today, and we certainly hope you'll come back next week for our next episode. In the meanwhile, to learn more about Team Gallagher, log on to GallagherLaw.com That's GALIHER Law.com.